find what inspires you and allow it to lead you through the unknown.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and tackle some of the biggest issues facing Asia today. It can be hard for would-be impact investors and worthy projects to find each other. Some people focus more on profits, while others focus more on purpose. That's where Dorothy Lam comes in with Dream Impact, an organization that brings the two together. Starting off as an art student in New York, to co-founding an investment matchmaking ecosystem that connects more than 150 social startups with funders, Dorothy holds the ultimate guide to ensuring your business makes more than just money. She joins me on Crazy Smart Asia to share how to avoid impact washing, why building a community isn't as easy as it looks, and how to navigate the thorny road of investment matchmaking. Here's our conversation.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. So Dorothy Lam, co-founder and chief catalyst of Dream Impact. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're going to kick off with a quick fire round. Describe what you do in one sentence.
So on an abstract level, I'd say we're breathing life into cross-sector collective impact. And that means working with different stakeholders, corporates, investors, and social enterprises to create opportunities for them for business and to create social impact.
Mm. Do you have a mantra in life?
Be here now.
What's your biggest guilty pleasure?
Ice cream!
What's the best advice you've ever received?
Detach from the pain.
Wow.
That you're experiencing. Yeah.
So before we get into Dream Impact, growing up, what are the formative experiences which demonstrate your character?
Yeah, I think early childhood, definitely a lot of exposure into different medium of art. So like singing, piano, music classes, dancing, painting. Growing up, my mom was also very open to me. There's no right way of dancing. There's no best way of painting. So it's already kind of encouraging creativity from a very early age. And I think that links to my high school years where I got an award for highest achievement in Hong Kong for art, and also my teacher encouraging me to study art in university time, and then leading to university where there was a class also on art and society, then the link between the two, which is also how it informed my work today.
So you actually studied art in New York, right? What was your experience like mm-hmm. there? And what were the lessons that you learned?
Yeah, I mean, New York is like the center of the universe. I mean, according to New Yorkers, as they always say. But definitely the center for 20th century contemporary art. So a lot happened, like Andy Warhol, Donald Judd, all these amazing, Yoko Ono, like all these amazing artists lived and worked there and had their footprints around the city, and then a lot of younger artists, aspiring artists, go there to connect. It's super international, super global, and very diverse backgrounds. So the stimulation is very multifaceted and multidimensional. Mm. And it's also like life and art almost blend as one. So people like walking on the street, just even how they dress feels like a fashion show. I remember the first week there, I felt really intimidated because people are just like walking really cool, like dressed in like weirdest, but really fashionable way. And then people having galleries, you know, every corner of the streets. And also, it's also a very financial city, right? So it's also a financial center of the world. it's like the mix of these two worlds coming together is really interesting for me. And
that's amazing. Yeah, New York is this very vibrant and diverse city that seems to attract and appeal to so many different types of people, right? So many different types of cultures, backgrounds, and interests that you see there in the people there. So how did you actually go from an art student in New York to an investment matchmaking founder?
Dream Impact started as this resource platform for social enterprises. We have a co-working space, co-working community, and an event space to like connecting them to schools and other collaborators that they want to meet. And then seeing capital as a big piece of that and how there's a growing interest for investors to put their money where their heart is aligned. Mm. So not only looking at financial returns, but also where their values lie. And often those values come from their personal experiences. So, and then I found also on the other side, impact venture founders also have a gap between seed grants and funding to the institutional rounds where traditional venture capitalists would be interested in their companies. So I think impact investors play that sweet spot in early stage founders who are very high impact and also need just a bit more capital to push and to prove their track record. Mm.
So I understand that your parents are also kind of inspirations behind why you actually started Dream Impact, right? Do you want to share a little bit more about their own background and how kind of that influenced you to want to start Dream Impact?
So my father is an entrepreneur and our family's in eyewear business. Mm. And growing up, I just remember he always said, you know, treat your company like your family. And the eyewear business has policies that are like caring for the staff's children and the staff's parents so that the children get subsidized for their studies and their extracurricular activities. So kind of like, oh, that's what, you know, businesses with a purpose can look like. And then for my mother, very much inspired by her leadership and also her empathy, her professional backgrounds in social work. And she went on to be a philanthropist and helping organizations, you know, develop their youth and community work and also fundraising for large nonprofits as well. So very down to earth, very much caring for each and every person that she meets. A great leader, all of her staff will remember her for many years because she also cared about their professional development and their personal development. Mm. So kind of someone who is very holistic in looking at social impact from the micro to the macro.
So you mentioned that your dad is a businessman and an entrepreneur himself as well. What would you say his style of leadership or his style as a founder is like? And what were, you think, the biggest lessons that you learned from him as an entrepreneur yourself?
The biggest lessons would be how to manage people and how to overcome failures. Mm. And he always says, every business is a people business because you need people to run it, whatever business you're in. So the first thing you need to manage is your team. And that's like no AI or no machine can replace, because otherwise you might as well just be a solo entrepreneur, right? But as long as you're working with a team, you will always be working with people. And so how do you leverage their greatest talents and gifts and allow them to shine in the team? How do you place them in the right places? Mm. How do you hire? How do you fire? Actually, the biggest job of a CEO is hiring and firing.
Yeah.
Dealing with failure would be like, he's also gone through many ups and downs in his own business, right? But he always says, I only give myself one day to be upset. And the next day I wake up and it's a whole new day and I keep going. And I'm like, wow.
That's a good mindset to have.
Yeah, and it's really not easy.
So bringing back to your interest in art a little bit, who would you say are your favorite artists and how have they influenced your approach as a founder?
Yeah, I'd say two artists. One is Joseph Beuys. Mm. He's an artist in around the Second World War. So he's very holistic and well-rounded and One of my favorite concepts that he wrote about is the social sculpture, how society itself is a sculpture and it's sculpted by all the players and different people as artists in this co-creation process. And it's the relationship between people that shapes society. And so, and then a lot of hit, I think a lot of the role of the artist is to probe and to ask questions for people to think differently. I think art is not a way to give you an answer compared to many things in life. Maybe you're always looking for the answer and maybe other texts would give you the answers directly. But I think art is always a tool for reflection and to probe, so you come up with the answers yourself. And so his works would probe and ask these questions of different connections and how each of us, you know, play a role in that. And then the second artist I would say is Marina Abramović, and she's a performance artist. She's really outrageous and bold, daring, and she would have these pieces where it's a performance. She would lie on an ice block with like a knife, scissors, and a gun, or like other tools to see what the audience would do to her and kind of question human limits. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the limit of like your action to someone else? And so like people would like scratch on her and like do all kinds of crazy things until someone actually picked up the gun and someone else stopped the other person.
Wow.
So it's like, whoa, you know, what would happen? What would have happened? So it's all like posing these what ifs scenarios. And she also had a piece in MoMA where she simply sat in front of someone, and it was called "The Artist is Present." And different people can sit in front of her and just look into her eyes. And and that itself was the experience. And everyone would react differently. Someone laughed, some people cried, some people got really bored. And it's like, what does someone's present do to someone else?
For those who might not be aware of what Dream Impact does, can you set the scene for its mission?
Our vision is to be the force of collective impact. So we're the glue, the invisible force that ties different people together. And so that develops into our mission, which is to connect entrepreneurs with resources. We also bridge across different sectors. So from the academics to the commercial world to the social welfare world, how can we bridge the divides so that we can collectively work towards different social missions?
Mm.
And the last one is to scale and deepen collective impact.
Mm-hmm.
So connecting investors to ventures would be one to scale. And many of our programs also deepen the relationship between people, because we think the value of the community is not just on business, but the sense of belonging as well.
Okay. So on Dream Impact's website, you actually specifically made the distinction between social enterprises and impact ventures. For those who are uninitiated, can you explain the key difference between the two? Well, sometimes I think the words are being used interchangeably, right? But they do mean quite different things. Could you explain the difference for us?
Sure. We're using those two words differently just to differentiate on the spectrum of capital. So let's say we have traditional philanthropy and we have traditional businesses. So traditional nonprofits, they rely on grants and they are purely philanthropic organizations. They might not generate their own revenue, but they do really high impact work. And then on traditional businesses, they have a financial goal and they serve and deliver those services. Whereas social enterprises and impact ventures are in between. But I would say social enterprises are closer to the philanthropy side and impact ventures are closer to the commercial side. And social enterprises, the difference for us is that social enterprises are more mission first. They have set out an impact goal that they would like to achieve, whether that is prevent elderly from falling or increase employment for the deaf, et cetera, or increase urban farming in Hong Kong. So it's very much mission first. And they have a self-sustainable business model to operate and deliver that mission. Whereas Impact Venture, I would say it's more scalable company that could go global. So mostly it could be tech-driven, whether that's a software or hardware. And they're set out to solve specific social issues, but the technology can also be scaled to have other uses as well.
Okay.
So for example, we have ocean waste collection autonomous boat that can be used for collecting ocean waste, but it can also be used as short-range cargo shipping. So it's scalable and can be used for multiple use cases, but itself also has an impact mission.
So we like to talk about aha moments on Crazy Smart Asia. Your light bulb moment where you knew you had to do this, right? So tell me about your journey into actually taking the plunge and starting Dream Impact. What was that like?
Yeah, so the aha moment came when I was studying my master's in New York between art and technology. And there was a class with the UNICEF Office of Innovation, and we studied design thinking and how do we use technology to solve social issues. And in the summer between the 2 years, I came back to Hong Kong and we started talking about this idea of Dream Impact, utilizing our family's warehouse to become this hub for innovation for social good. And it was like, this is it. Like, doing this is much better than studying about it. Like, I can actually implement and utilize the resources to execute. And Hong Kong is also my home and my roots. Mm. So I felt the calling to come back. And I actually dropped out from the program halfway. Mm. And I was like, this is an amazing opportunity. I would love to implement what I've learned. And also, it was timing of the different circumstances that came to be and conspired for Dream Impact to happen. And I felt like, that's it. I would love to dedicate my time to do this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, yeah. So we talked a little bit about impact investing just now, right? So what would you say is your definition of impact investing?
I would describe it as the third axis to risk and return.
Mm-hmm.
So many investors look at their investments from a risk versus return perspective. So it's like the XY axis. And impact is like the Z axis that's like sticking out at the page at you. And it's like this third dimension that you really have to consider. Because when you only look at risk versus return, it's only on the financial dimension. And impact is capturing all the intangible values that cannot be captured on pure financial terms. So that can be social welfare, it can be inclusion, it can be well-being, on environmental, it can be biodiversity, it can be waste. So all of the negative externalities that are caused by the market, by the free market, that is not paid for by anyone, can be accounted for in impact investments. But the impact investments have to be innovative enough to turn these negative externalities into growth and growth opportunities. So finding new business models that can solve these issues in creative ways that also generates financial return. So whether it's intentional, it's measurable, and it has financial return would also be the criteria for impact investments.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to share a little bit more about what the problem is here? What is impact washing actually? What and how do we work to prevent it?
Yeah, so impact washing is when you label something and that it's not, right? So I think whether it's ESG or an impact, it can easily become a labels game. Mm. So putting an SDG on it, like these are the SDGs that we're working on, can easily lead to impact washing without due diligence. On the impact due diligence process, we have to dig deeper onto if it's offering a product, even like a battery, how is the battery made? What is the supply chain? What are the practices in putting that into making that battery? And then also the life cycle analysis of the whole battery, whether afterwards, are there ways to deal with the battery? Is it going to be toxic? How are there already recycling programs put in place? So looking at that, and then on social side, we have to look at and also interview those stakeholders as well. So on the borrowing case, we have to also interview the borrowers. Did you feel like this product actually created positive impact on you, or it could have just been any other lending company and would have been the same? So that part is very important. And on the due diligence process, it always has to be both quantitative and qualitative. So quantitative, looking at financial numbers and impact numbers, and qualitative, like, you know, interviewing the stakeholders to find whether that product was actually impactful for them or not.
What would you say to founders or business owners actually who are building businesses and pitching to you guys? How can they be more mindful or aware to avoid impact washing? What would you say to them? Mm-hmm. And what would be your one advice?
I think define your impact in very specific terms. So whether if you're an education company, define what dimension of education you are promoting and how. If you're an aging company, define which part of aging are you supporting or helping or improving, then how. So that process is called the theory of change. And you have to have a proposition of what kind of change you want to see in the world and what you're doing to create that change. So they have to be very clear of the logic that they're putting in to actually support whether their work is contributing to that impact or not. And that is a very good mental exercise for anyone who's just starting a social enterprise or starting an impact venture, or a business, an existing business that is looking to do more social impact. Okay, input, activities, output, outcome, impact. How they can go from the resources that they're contributing to what kind of activities they should be doing, to how can they measure the outcome, output, like how many workshops or how many products they've sold, how many people they've interacted with, to outcomes, what changed, their quality of life changed, they're happier, they feel more empowered, they gained more skills. So those are outcomes. So to prevent impact washing, it also, rather than only focusing on the outcomes, which they can claim or like, this is our mission, and then actually looking at the inputs, outputs, activities to see whether that led to that outcome.
What kind of problem or do you think gaps are you trying to address in investing? Is it lack of funding for social impact funds or something else?
I would say the conversations between investors and ventures, funders and projects, oftentimes they don't know how to like interact with each other almost, or where to meet each other. And it can be quite confronting to do that upfront. And so our role as a platform is to facilitate these conversations, to allow them to have an have a chance to, so our platform can first understand both sides, what the founder is looking for and what the investor is looking for. And the matchmaking is in matching their expectations, right? A lot of the impact founders are very passionate about what they do and they just want to grow the company. And so they don't really know how to structure the investment. They just know I need more money or like I need,
right?
And sometimes they don't really know the amount or when or how. So our role is to kind of help them structure and scope that and like, this is maybe the amount you need, helping them understand their capital needs. And then on the other hand, helping investors, they're like, I just want to invest in impact. And okay, what kind of themes are you looking for? You're looking for more health related, education related, sustainability related, and then helping them define that mission impact agenda and what stage of the companies are they looking for, and then helping the two sides come together with and managing expectations of both sides. So that's the role that we're playing.
So can you tell us a bit more about some of the successful metrics or maybe some impact stories of the sort of difference that you're making to founders and investors?
So last year we matched an educational social enterprise to an impact investor. The investor is a very different kind of impact investor. She's an investor who is looking for great impact with financial returns. And she invested in Lavada Education, which is this company that works with 100 secondary schools in Hong Kong every year to provide creative education programs for these students in partnership with other corporations and nonprofits. That match was really a match for value, match for their personal value that is very much aligned in changing Hong Kong's education system and in changing Hong Kong's youth's future mindset. So on that, they were very much aligned. And also on the profit side, right? It's the company also has great profits, and so it's able to give out dividends to its investors. And I think for the social enterprises, they definitely need to look at how they can become more profitable. And for the venture side, they might not be profitable at first, but they have to be very scalable and be profitable in the future. So the venture, I would say the venture's game is also very much on the scalability and on the valuation game. So you kind of go from series A, B, C, D, E onwards. And on social enterprise side, you have to figure out how can you be the most profitable and while creating the greatest, deepest impact that you can.
So what would success look like for you? What would be the dream impact for you?
The dream impact is a holistic, socially and environmentally minded eco-township. So it's almost a mini economy where we have schools and hospitals, or we call them health centers, and infrastructure, and also a lot of software, like people and communities, that everything within that system are socially minded. So if we want them to grow and to work with corporates, the ultimate vision would be all these enterprises and corporates connect and form this web of trade amongst them that share these values as well.
Okay.
So that means we could be developing new housing estates or new schools or new hospitals that are using these social enterprises and have these same shared values.
So you've been doing this for 6 years now, since Dream Impact started. What do you know now to be true that you didn't believe 6 years ago?
I would say that building a community is not easy. And I think in the past, I've only participated in other people's communities, and it felt like, wow, this, I feel so supported, and there's this invisible culture that has already established. And I realized that actually to develop a new culture takes a long time. Like Hong Kong people take a long time to get to know you and to feel comfortable and to trust and to open up themselves. Maybe it had taken me 6 years to get to know some of the founders and they're just starting to open up a little bit more about their personal like feelings and like how they're doing.
Right.
It's building up these relationships continuously over time, over long periods of time. Yeah. So that's something very different than what I initially expected.
So this story is all about the story of the people or the person behind the business and the unexpected stories of entrepreneurship that we may not know about. What would you say is unexpected about you or your journey?
I think from studying art to going to facilitating investments and working with corporations is definitely unexpected for my younger self. My view on business and the world is that we can't plan too much. So I think also always have plan B in mind for different things to happen. But yeah, I very much embrace the unexpected.
I really like that. Embrace the unexpected, especially as a founder, right? Nothing goes according to plan. Or if you can have a long-term plan, but nothing really works out as you would expect it. So embracing the unexpected is really, it's a really good mindset to have. So if there is one thing that the listeners can take away from this conversation today to help them build a better place, a better world, what should it be? Mm-hmm.
I would say find what inspires you and allow it to lead you through the unknown.
I like that. I really like that. So what's one question an interviewer has never asked you that you wish they would?
I wish that more interviews would be more raw and kind of talk about bad habits of people and of these successful people, right? And we often read about the good habits of people, and maybe there are many bad habits too. And how do people overcome them, right?
So maybe let me ask you that question then as our closing question. So what would you say is your biggest bad habit and how have you overcome it?
So I think not enjoying reading books is a big one. And by societal standards, it's such a big thing that you have to read a lot and read books and keep reading. And when I found that I don't really enjoy reading a lot of books or a lot of text, it made me feel less worthy or less confident or capable. But I realized what I love is listening. So I've actually pivoted to audiobooks, podcasts, and or even book summaries. And I think they are super helpful in just realizing that I learn a different way and admitting to myself that I learn a different way. I think it's just good to reconcile with yourself, like your weaknesses and what you can develop on, and then find, oh, maybe I just learn differently. There are so many more ways to gain knowledge and to experience the world that I think as an artist and as a social entrepreneur, I think we can empower and find new ways of learning.
Well, thank you, Dorothy Lam, for joining us on Crazy Smart Asia. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you, Sylvie.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Crazy Smart Asia. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Coulter and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiao Wei. In the meantime, do remember,
I only give myself one day to be upset. And the next day, I wake up and it's a whole new day and I keep going.
See you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.